Hello, and welcome to Draw, Lose or Draw, a podcast covering all things Partick Thistle. On today's episode, we are going to look back on a bumper weekend for Partick Thistle, and join me to do so, we have assembled a bumper panel. Rhys Haldane, Rhys, it's been a long time since we've both been on together. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Matt. I know it's been a while, probably the longest time I've been out the side, but no, I'm happy to be back and looking forward to a double header today.
Yeah, rested for the running. Heather Holloway's here. Heather, how are you?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Matt. What we previewed last week that this was probably an amazing weekend, you know, for the away days, and it didn't disappoint.
Tom Hosey's here. Tom, are you well?
Well, maybe stretching it a wee bit. I'm still suffering from after cup final shenanigans yesterday, but apart from that, I'm top of the world. Well, not quite, but getting there.
And rounding off our panel, David Forrest. David, hi from the successes of winning a goblet, the much coveted goblet in our broth. I suspect you're still on cloud nine.
Oh, I'm in cloud 10, Matt. It was good to get some self-aware back. I would like to say if the Partick Thistle archive, you know, if the Historical Society they want the goblet to display along with like the Honved tea set and all the programmes in the 1950s, I'm more than happy to donate it. Although one of the jewels fell off and we've had to glue it back on. So once that's all set in, we're certainly it's free to go to a good home in the Firhill Trophy cabinet.
You can hear more about David's travails and our broth on Travel Jags. That's available. So you can go and listen to that. We'll focus on the football and we'll start with yesterday, Sunday's cup final. And Tom, we'll start with you. The first time Partick Thistle have played in a cup final and your time supporting them. How was your morning, first and foremost?
It was a bit of a rush. The bus was leaving from Firhill. I think we were there to be there for 8:30 for a 9 o'clock departure. So it was all a bit of a rush. So that kind of helped, I think, with the nerves. Because Saturday going into Sunday, I wasn't really expecting to get much sleep. Being busy on Sunday morning definitely helped. But I think once we got going, I think that's maybe when the nerves started to kick in a wee bit. You know, 8:30 is far too early to be starting off for a game on a weekend afternoon.
What was the journey to Tynecastle like? We've seen a lot of footage. We've seen the Sky Sports cameras on the team bus, the pictures of the team stopping on the way there. What was that journey and the build-up to the game like for you?
The journey there was fantastic, particularly after the pre-match meal, going from the hotel to Tynecastle. We had the music blaring in the back of the bus. We had Welsh's THISTLE blaring out with all the girls giving it loudy. I'm not sure whether they were as relaxed as it sounded or whether they were just trying to cover up the nerves, but it was really buoyant, really exciting, and you felt we were on the cusp of something really special. I mean, the whole preparation on the Sunday was impeccable. You know, we had a Parks and Hamilton bus, one of their top-of-the-range VIP executive coaches, a fantastic pre-match meal. Everything was absolutely spot on, and I think the girls appreciated that and they really bought into it. And I say it was just really, really exciting. The journey there was great.
I'll stick with you for now, Tom, and I'll ask you about the team news. It was a rare start, I think, for Imogen Longkick in attack. She's normally been utilised and very effectively off the bench this season. How much do you think that helped the way the team started the game? I was particularly impressed with the first half hour or so. How much do you think her addition helped that, and were there any other surprises in the team for you?
There wasn't any other surprises, really. We were a bit hamstrung with a couple of players on loan from Rangers who obviously couldn't play. We had another two or three that were cup-tied with previous clubs. So I think in some respects, the team almost kind of picked itself. The shape of it, though, was a bit different. And I think Imogen's inclusion up top had a massive, massive impact on how the first 30 minutes went. And it was a big, you know, it was a big fuss made over the 0-0 draw we got against them at Petershill Park. Brian went to 5 at the back that afternoon, and it was largely all about defending and limiting the opportunities that Rangers got. But I think he was determined from the minute we got through the semi-final that we were going to have a right go at Rangers in the final. I think he was saying, look, what's the point in getting to a cup final and just sitting in and defending? Because they will eventually score. You very, very rarely can defend for 90 minutes against Rangers and not concede. But what I think it did, it caught them in the hop. I think they were expecting us to line up pretty much how we'd lined up in that league game. Nobody really has a go at them. Celtic's probably the only team in the SWPL that has a go at them. They play by a very high line. And Imogen's got pace to burn, so any balls in behind that Rangers defence, they were going to struggle. And I think they were really, really rattled that first 30 minutes. I genuinely think they were surprised and were anxious and worried.
I totally agree with you, Tom. The first half hour was excellent. I think you've summed it up really nicely there. Reece, obviously they've conceded goals at pretty key moments, you know, late on in the first half and early on in the second, which really killed the game. But what were your overall reflections of the final itself?
Yeah, just carrying on from what Tom said, I totally agree. I think that we had Rangers kind of on the back foot in the opening stages, and as I said, they did look rattled. Obviously, they got that goal kind of just before 15 minutes, and you think at that point, you've done well to get to 15 minutes because you know obviously the firepower that Rangers have. And you just think, when it gets to a final, you're like, right, we'll see 10 minutes, we'll see another 10, and get yourself to half-time. But as soon as they get that first goal, you're just hoping that, you know, Thistle can steady themselves, don't concede another straight away. And then thankfully, we go up the other end and score an absolute screamer. Probably both men's and women's teams included, potentially a goal of the season. I mean, you scored that in a cup final. It's just, I don't think you can get any more postage stamp than that. It was perfect, and scenes and the Thistle end of that stand, it was amazing. A special moment for Rachel Donaldson, and a special moment for everybody at the club to get a goal in a cup final. That's I remember saying that before the game. Just if you can get a goal, you know, no one's expecting Thistle to win. A lot of Thistle fans were not expecting us to win, but if you can get a goal, then you never know. Put the what's the saying? Is it put the cat amongst the pigeons? And I thought we'd done that because, you know, a goal at a crucial time as well. And it's nice to score in a cup final at any point, but you didn't really want to score a consolation. But to get the goal to level things was brilliant. And then for the 5 or 10 minutes after that, I thought we'd done all right as well. And we could have potentially went and got another one. Like you say, they were shaky at that point. Their second goal, it's like a great goal. And then the third one, like you say, it's a bad tip. We can see that half time. And at that point, you've got an uphill task. And like you say, coming out the second half, another one. And then Brian makes the decision just to go a bit more defensive. He doesn't want his team to get embarrassed. They don't deserve that. You know, they got to a cup final on merit and they kept a respectable scoreline. So in the day, it wasn't our day, but a memorable event for everyone at the club.
It certainly was. Heather, I know Rachel Donaldson's your pal, so I'll leave the stage to you to wax lyrical about her and that goal.
Oh, she is just one of the most amazing people, and she's just so fun, easy to talk to, so down to earth, and but what a goal. And her celebration and her interview afterwards about the fact that she didn't even really remember it, just loved the celebration, and that's just her through and through, you know. And I love the footage they had of her before the game, you know, the one they had, I think it was on STV, about her being a teacher, and just the fact that the way that she obviously... I'm inspired by her because I, after a day at work, I couldn't even imagine, you know, running around my street, let alone going and playing the games that she does and have the impact that she does on so many games. Like, she scores some of the most amazing goals. And as you say, she is my friend and I am extremely biased, but I think that she'd be my favourite player, even if she, you know, wasn't someone that I know. And it's just also, I think one of my favourite things about her is the way that she is with fans, like young, old, whatever. And, you know, my little niece, who's 4, was like waving at Rachel throughout the game, which is just like so sweet because Rachel's like made such an effort just to kind of get to know her and inspire her. And there's so many young Thistle fans out there who will, like, you know, be going on a football pitch soon and trying to do a Rachel Donaldson. And the way that everyone celebrated that goal and was just you know, that was such a special moment. And you know, there's some of us who've never been at, you know, a final with Thistle in it with such great stakes, and you know, to score a goal like that, I mean, we'll all remember it, and an absolutely amazing champion for our club, and just, you know, I couldn't think of a player that deserved it more.
David, I was listening to the chat you had with Brian Graham on our special episode last week, and I continue to be sort of taken aback by the sort of effort and commitment that goes in from, you know, like volunteers, coaches, but players especially. He was talking about players going to the gym on Monday morning before their work to get in gym sessions to add that sort of professional aspect to the team. Just with that in mind, like, how much did the girls in that team deserve a moment like that yesterday with a goal and the turnout that they got from the Thistle fans as well?
Oh, it was... they absolutely deserved all of it. I mean, the Imogen Longcake feature on ITV Cumbria, it boggles my mind that she lives in Carlisle and works a 9-to-5 in Carlisle and then just leaves her job in Carlisle and goes, right, I'm away to training in Springburn every, like, three times a week and plays on a Sunday. Frankly, that is too much. Like, that is really too much. That is insane. And there's so many stories of that, of all these players have sacrificed lives, you know, they don't, every time we speak to players and we ask them about their routine and stuff like that, one of the recurring motifs is don't have much of a social life. You know, it's football, a train, a play, this is my circle of friends, you know, so to speak, like, you know, like, we are really close to that group, because this is, for a lot of them, this is it, this is what they do with the vast majority of their time outside of work. You know, you look at Rangers and you look at Celtic and Glasgow City and even Hibs and Hearts, they are full-time players who are paid to do this for a living. And this is their job. That is their job. Whereas they all have other jobs and, you know, they do incredible stuff. Even just having the jobs that they have without playing for Thistle makes some of them heroes in terms of what they do every day. I couldn't do all the stuff they do. And then if you're telling me, David, you need to go to the gym at like 5:30 in the morning on a Monday, absolutely not. I got in my bed at 7:50 this morning to work from home at 8 a.m. Like, I can't fathom the amount of work they go into. Arguably more than full-time players, because even though they train less, they have to put in a lot more to get to even just compete. And I think that's the main thing, is that we'd done the pod last week with Tom about the last time we beat Rangers. And the sort of, it's been so long since we've beaten Rangers and Celtic, and you look at the absolute gulf when even like when Rangers were the men's team were at their absolute worst against us, it was still like World Cup players and stuff like that, and guys who, you know, were capped for like various countries and stuff like that, and like that's such a huge gulf. But, you know, Thistle's men's team are still full-time players. That is still their job, and they work. They have all week to do that, whereas Thistle women don't. And it's just, it's unfathomable just how they do it. I don't know how they do it. And frankly, they deserve the world for it. They should be commended for just their general effort, and getting to a final like that in that landscape is just unbelievable. And it's that moment, that moment where she scored, I've not had a moment like it. It's up there with, I never thought that we would get a better moment than Bannigan at Dingwall this year, but that moment with Donaldson scoring that goal, and it's the goal that you want to score a cup final. It's not a tap-in or anything. It's an absolute screamer. It's one that you can say to your family, 20, 30 years, I scored an absolute screamer in the cup final, and then show them it, and they'll go, yeah, that was. You're not embellishing it whatsoever. They're all heroes, and yeah, I just think they're absolutely brilliant.
They certainly are all heroes. Tom, back on the game. In the first half, I thought the standout's obviously Donaldson with the goal. You've mentioned Longcake's press, and I thought Claire Doherty was outstanding at left back, or sort of tenaciousness or tenacity even, and her sort of link up play as well. I think she assisted the Donaldson goal, but she had some really nice moves other than that. And then in the second half, obviously the game turns into a bit of a slog. I thought Falconer did well to lead the back line, and Easton and Goh made some really good saves actually late on to keep the score down. I know when we previewed the game, you said everyone would need to perform, but who caught your eye yesterday? Who deserves special mention?
I think they all do to a certain degree. I don't think there's one of them that could say that they let themselves down. They all performed to extremely high standard. I'm glad you mentioned Claire Dock. I hadn't seen the goal back until this morning. And all I remembered at the time was the fact that Rachel's pinged it into the top corner. I hadn't realised how good Dock's lead-up play to that was. And she's a tremendous player. She's been part of it since SWPL2. So I was especially pleased that she got the chance to sample playing in a cup final with us. Same with Demi and Amy Bullock. And just touching on Emma, kind of going off tangent here, but how wonderful was that piece that she had on the club website and Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, writing that letter to her 12-year-old self. That was just so emotional reading that, just from the first sentence onwards. But no, just to get back to the original question, I don't think there was a single failure. I genuinely don't. And I do want to just kind of touch briefly on Ava Easton. Obviously, she's been the centre of attention due to the antics of an old white man on Twitter who seems to be triggered by anything that females do. I thought she made two or three fantastic saves. I think she should be walking out with her held high as well. And it shouldn't be forgotten, there's only one goalkeeper in Scotland this season that's kept a clean sheet against Rangers women, and it's Ava Easton. 17 years old, ready in the Scotland under-19 squad. She has got a fantastic future ahead of her, and I hope at least some of it will be spent at Petershill Park. Don't know what will happen in the summer, but she's got an incredibly bright future ahead of her. I'm sure she'll be playing in plenty more cup finals in the years to come.
I hope so. There was one save in the second. She made a few good saves in the second half. There's one in particular from a shot that was flying in the top corner, and that was an outstanding save. I remember one of the first games I saw her play up at Pierce Hill, and I couldn't believe it when I found out I didn't know too much about her, and I couldn't believe it when I found out she was 17. I think she had the ball at her feet, and she skinned the striker who was closing her down, and then she just played a pass. She's got so many good attributes for a goalkeeper, and obviously don't want to linger on that particular man you've mentioned, Tom, but when I saw that tweet that he posted, the first thing that came into my head was, wow, he's going to get a real shock when he finds out what the men's goalkeepers at Partick Thistle have been up to this season. He's made some really good saves yesterday.
I was going to say, tell me you've never seen Tiffany's goal for Morton against us in the Christmas New Year break.
We will move on then, and we will chat about the men's trip and victory in our broth on Saturday. Now, who am I going to chuck the dreaded starting 11 question to? Heather, an unchanged starting team, no real surprises there. Bannigan missing out on the matchday squad with a knock, but I think we mentioned on last week's episode, we'd all be quite happy with the starting 11 when we saw it.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was good to see that, you know, we've talked about the recent weeks with, you know, some injury scares, etc. And it was good just to have that balance. And I think we spoke a lot about the fact that Luke Macbeth had a really good time at centre back, and it was good to see that. And I felt, if anyone's going to be able to deal with the Arbroath wind, it's going to be him. And also, I mean, we have to say it was really exciting in some ways to see some of our young players getting on the bench. And obviously, it's really gutting about the fact that Tommy and Wasiri are out at the moment, and Tommy obviously is much more long term. But it's great that we're being able to give that, you know, that spotlight and pathway for the academy, and just shows the importance of it. But yeah, really happy with the starting team, and especially after the kind of form that our both had been on, it was good to know that we had, you know, our strong hitters out.
Rhys, you can kick us off with some general chat about the game itself. Do you think we were a good value for the 3 points?
Definitely. I was saying to you off air, Matt, like, I thought it's probably best we've played in a wee while in terms of actually just dominating a game kind of from start to finish. I thought it was pretty comfortable throughout. You know, when you look at things, you know, Arbroath for bottom of the league, kind of, was it 9 points adrift and goal difference of minus 36. And based on that performance there, you can kind of see why. I feel as if they didn't really lay a glove on us. And it should have been, you know, realistically 3-4 or 5-0 Thistle, because we did dominate. We missed a couple of chances that should have been in the back of the net. We had two goals chopped off. We had a shot cleared off the line. I don't know how it didn't manage to go in. I think about 80% of the ball was over the line, and I don't know how it didn't end up in. We had a penalty claim. It was just a lot going on, and you were just waiting for the inevitable injury time Arbroath equaliser. It's just the Partick Thistle script that you can batter a team for as long as you like, and as long as there's only one goal in it, that team has always got a chance, and that team will likely score when they're playing Partick Thistle. But thankfully, we hung on. It was good to get a clean sheet, and it was a really good performance. But I know we'll probably touch on individual players, but just obviously two players that I wanted to mention from that game was, of course, Aidan Fitzpatrick. Thought he was brilliant. 10 goals for the season now, and he's really kind of made that Tiffany, you know, it was a big thing this summer with Tiffany leaving us, and if Fitzy could step up and fill his boots, and I think he's filled them and then some. I think he's been excellent this season, you know, 10 goals, 9 assists. And you forget he's just turned 23. He feels like he's been around forever. And he's only going to get better. So no, it was brilliant. And I mentioned to you guys the other night, that near post shot that he takes on so often, I think it's got keepers out maybe 4 or 5 times already this season. And I can think off the top of my head the last time we played Arbroath there at the weekend, even the Livingston Cup game, the keepers are getting a hand to it, but the body's not in a position to, you know, divert and get over to it. So it's a good trait to have, and he seems to be nailing that down. And of course, the other player that I want to mention is just excelling week in, week out, is Luke McBeth. Obviously, been moved into centre half in the last couple of weeks, and it just looks like he was born to play there, just no nonsense centre half. And you look at Luke McBeth and you're just expecting him, boy, he's came for the juniors, he's just going to do his job, just blitter the ball at the park. But there was times where he's taking it down, his passing was exceptional, and he's dribbling it out up into the opposition box. So it's looked like an absolutely brilliant find, and I can't wait to see him with a pre-season with us under his belt.
I'll stick with you for now, Reece, just for a little chat on Fitzpatrick. We mentioned on last week's pod, I think Heather brought up that she may have been asked by a pal actually about Fitzpatrick's form, and I think we sort of agreed that we weren't really concerned just because he's capable of that moment of magic. Like he's taking his game to a new level where it only takes one moment for him to affect the game. And like that, there was a clear example of that on Saturday, obviously. Do you think that goal will sort of help him recapture his best form from early on in the season? I don't even know if you agree that he's been a little bit quieter recently, but do you think that goal could sort of signal a big end to the season for him?
I certainly hope so. And I do kind of agree with you in some respect, because I think he started the season in blistering form, and even up until New Year, I thought it was exceptional, but the last, you know, 8 games is when we've been poor, and it's kind of coincided with Fitzy being a bit quieter. You know, we've changed formation, we've changed shape, and it's not always suited the likes of Lawless as well. Lawless has kind of went off the boil a wee bit, but it seems kind of like, not to say that it was unknown, you know, Fitzpatrick's had 3 great seasons with us now, but, you know, last season he only came in towards the end of the season, and teams couldn't live with him. But, you know, it always happens that teams kind of suss you out. They watch you long enough, they know it will double up on him, and I feel like that was happening. There was teams doubling up on him, tripling up on him, and it was getting no room to, you know, break free. He's used to dealing with that, and I'm sure he'll come out on the other end, and like you say, if he can go on a run again like we had it from him at the end of last season, then, you know, you don't know where we could end up. So hopefully he can, and I know it's already been touched on as well. Obviously, Tommy's season's done now as well, so you've got to hope that your Fitzpatrick's, your Lawless, and even your Brian Graham stay fit, because it's a great thing for the young boys to get on the bench. You know, your Shea Campbells and Thomas Horns are good prospects at the club, but we're down to the bare bones again. And if Brian Graham gets injured, you're Rico Diak for the rest of the campaign. So it's imperative these guys stay fit and stay firing. So yeah, I wish them all the best.
David, I know you were probably high on North Sea Air and drunk on the vibes that an away day to Arbroath provides, but what were your recollections of the 90 minutes on Saturday?
I would agree that I thought it was a very, very good performance from us. I thought Arbroath were quite poor, and from speaking to a friend of the show, Ewan Smith, it feels like that wasn't even the worst of Arbroath. It kind of goes back to the cup final point that you were talking about. I think Tom mentioned it about Graham saying you can't just sit and defend because eventually you will concede. And I feel that Arbroath are kind of regressing into that sort of just really defending, fighting for their lives. They just couldn't handle us, and it was a great performance. I do kind of agree. I think Lawless has went for a bit of a sticky patch, and I don't think it was his best game on Saturday. I think Fitzpatrick definitely much has came to the fore over Lawless at the moment in terms of like his form. But like Macbeth was brilliant. Muirhead was really good as well. I think that the switch of Nielsen and Macbeth has really helped Muirhead as well. And there was a tackle right at the end, because as we were saying, the last 10 minutes you're sitting there practically head in hands thinking we're going to concede out of nowhere. And there was a moment where you thought, this is it, it's going to be one each. And I believe it was Muirhead came in with an absolutely brilliant slide tackle to dispossess the guy, and really, really saved our bacon. And I thought that it, for as bad as our both were, when they kind of tried to turn the screw and go a bit more, right, we need something here near the end, and we handled it. I thought that the team as a whole were very, very good. And yeah, I think they just, the likes of Macbeth and Nielsen are really coming into their own.
Tom, I want to ask you a question that we spoke about last week. Our Broth's maybe a bit of an outlier just due to the league position, but I think the perception of, maybe this is a sort of historic perception of Partick Thistle, but certainly recently that we struggle against big physical teams, but that's 9 points out of 12 against our Broth this season, 10 out of 12 against Morton. Why do you think that is, despite the narrative that we struggle against teams like that?
That's a very good question. First of all, I think it's remarkable that that same Arbroath side comprehensively defeated us at Fir Hill back in September. I thought they were very good that afternoon and thoroughly merited their, I think it was 3-0 that afternoon. I think we're a bit more streetwise. I think maybe that's why we deal better with the physical sides like Morton and Arbroath. There's a perception, I think, that Chris Doolan's, well, I mean, he is a nice guy. They're just not getting away from that, but I think that's a perception that he's not a horrible wee bastard like Imre, but there is a steel to him, and I think he is a very streetwise manager, and I think the longer he's in the role, he's getting more and more streetwise. So I think we do the dirty side of the game better than we've done in a lot of occasions, and there is some, you know, we've got good experienced players that are not adverse to the dark arts at times. So I think maybe that's a factor in us doing better against the physical sides that we perhaps have done previously. And I think that definitely was an issue. We didn't like it when teams were in our faces to a certain extent, but we've got a bit of steel and a bit of grit about us now without having to be overly physical ourselves. And I think Macbeth's physicality helps in a lot of respects as well. And again, he's not a dirty player by any means, but he is physically imposing, strong in the tackle, good in the air. So having that kind of physicality in the team is a big asset as well, I think.
Certainly is. Heather, do you think we're nailed on for third now? And I know you spoke last week about going in a bit early and on chance of going up at Dingwall and stuff, but do you expect us to sort of be pretty safe in that third spot in the playoffs away?
It obviously has been nice over the past few weeks to, you know, get the 3 points on the board and maybe secure the level. Obviously aware that some of the teams around us, Airdrie and Dunfermline, have gone on some runs and, you know, made some important dents in other people's challenges. But I feel like if we do well on Saturday and put to bed any worries or concerns, I think a win on Saturday would be a good statement of intent. And also, I mean, we know famously that a good run in towards the playoffs can change the way that the fairy tale ends. So I think that it would be really, really good for us in the long run as well as the short term, securing third to make sure that it's ours. And I find it unbelievable the fact that we've been third for since September, I think it is. And it would just be, it would just be rubbish to give it away now. So I do hope. But there does seem to be a good steel in the team at the moment, the way they celebrated that, like the 3 points on Saturday at Arbroath. They obviously, you know, the players want it and are working hard for it. You can't deny it. And I hope that's it.
Anyone else you want to shout out for a bit of praise, Heather? Anyone else catch your eye on Saturday?
I think overall the team performance was good. I think I thought Harry Millen again was really crucial in the job he does. And I think we maybe spoke about earlier in this season that he'd been a little bit quieter and maybe his defensive side wasn't as strong as it had been. But I think it just shows that, you know, it would have been great if we'd had him in the playoffs last year. But yeah, no, I think, I mean, obviously Fitzy getting the goal, Graham was a nuisance, and it was one of those games, I think we've said already, the fact that we had so many almost chances. And then in another day, I think it was a 4-1 prediction would definitely have come true. But yeah, I think it was just a relief to get through the 90 minutes, and especially I think around the 94th minute there was a little bit of a worry, but you know, we go again, and it was just yeah, a good day out. And that was my first time Pleasureland, and I'm gutted that it could potentially be the last one for a while. The Dodgems are unreal, and yeah, just a brilliant day out.
When you're finished listening to this episode, please join us all in a minute of silence for our both away next season, and keep our fingers crossed that we'll get them in a cup. They'll be a big loss to the league. Reese, just lastly, we touched on Lawless's, maybe harshly, dip in form. I think Jack McMillan, his sort of partner in crime down the right, has been quite quiet as well. Do we think that right hand side is a problem? Is it just a little lull, or is it something a bit deeper than that? Do you think teams have perhaps sussed out that that's where we are at our strongest?
It's a tough one, and I 100% agree with you. I know I'm Jack McMillan's biggest fan, but yeah, he's been, I'd probably say he's had some of his poorer games lately. Don't think he's been awful or anything like that, but for his standards, I think he's not been great. At the weekend there, just a couple of bad touches, and sometimes the decision making, the final ball just isn't as good as what we expect from him. I wouldn't necessarily say it's entirely that teams have sussed us out, because I feel like even last season they knew how much of a threat that Jack McMillan and Lawless were. They know that these players are good, but if a good player is a good player, sometimes you can't live with him. And I felt like when McMillan and Lawless are both firing, then teams in this division simply can't live with that right hand side. But I think that it's a combination of two things, really. I don't think that McMillan's like a 100% fit. And of course, they both play their best when the other one's doing well. And like we've mentioned already, I feel like maybe Lawless has been a bit quiet, and you don't really get the best of McMillan in that scenario. So it's a combination of a few things. But I wouldn't have them out the team. You just need to persist with it, and they will eventually catch form again. And we just need to hope it's sooner rather than later.
Well, the men are back in action at Firhill on Saturday. They face Inverness. Tom, it's been three draws against Inverness this season. They've all been quite different games. What sort of game are you expecting? Are you expecting another close one, or do you think home advantage will pay in the end?
I think you've got to fancy another close one. I suppose, having said it's going to be a close one, this is the one that's going to be a comfortable win for one of the two teams. They don't seem, at least get the perception that they don't seem to lose an awful lot of games, Inverness. They draw a lot of games, which the fact that we've drawn three times with them is a reflection of. It was a good point they got up at Tannadice on Saturday. That will probably give them a wee bit of confidence. They've not struck me as a particularly good side the three times that we've played them. I think arguably their best performance against us was maybe the game at Firhill just before Christmas. But I think it's one that we have to be looking to win. I think we're probably one, maybe two wins away from being able to secure a playoff spot, and this is one that I think you would definitely target to get the 3 points from. But I mean, be aware of the side that's fighting for their lives down at the bottom of the league, and they're only 7 points off fourth as well, I think, which is remarkable. So you can't entirely, I wouldn't expect it to happen, but you can't entirely rule out the possibility that they could stage a late surge and finish in the top four themselves. But I mean, I'm expecting a really tough one, but one that I think we're more than capable of and will win ultimately.
Fingers crossed. I'll come back to you in a minute for a prediction, Tom. Heather, any changes you expect to the starting 11? Any changes in shape at all, or do we just go with what's worked in the last two games?
I think we go with what's worked, and yes, some players maybe weren't quite on their best form, but we still got the 3 points on Saturday, and I think that the consistency is key. I mean, the last game we played against them, obviously the 3-3, was very entertaining and end-to-end, and I just hope that this time we can be a bit more clinical with it and not make any, you know, stupid decisions. Obviously brilliant to get a clean sheet, and I think that should be the aim again. But no, I would go unchanged and yeah, just really take our chances when we get them.
Felix, do you want to kick us off with a score prediction?
I totally forgot that we hadn't beaten Inverness this season, and we had just drawn every time. I mean, they are ninth, aren't they? But they quite clear of Arbro, aren't they? They, I guess they're like 7 or 8 points or something like that.
Nine clear of Arbro, game in hand.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, they will be worried about getting sucked into the vortex, as you do when you are in that sort of position. And as Tom says, they're not that far off the promotion playoffs. It's a weird one where they could be in a playoff, but you know, it could be promotion, could be relegation. I don't think they've been particularly sparkling this season. They were a lot worse before Duncan Ferguson came in. I think he's maybe steadied the ship a little bit, but even then, it's still a tough job. Based purely on the last three, I say it probably is going to be a tight one, but I do think we will win. I think it's kind of fallen for us quite well that we've got this when they are, you know, when they are sort of, you know, when they are in ninth. So I'm going to go 2-0 Jags.
This prediction from you?
That Inverness team, like, they're a weird one because they do have a couple of good players, but I don't think they're a very good watch. Like David said, I'm not entirely sure that Duncan Ferguson was the right appointment. Seems like it was just one of them that was a big name. Even, you know, his managerial record wasn't exactly shining bright when they signed him, but he steadied the ship as such. But they're still much of a much, just they've not really moved. They remind me of the Alloa team. Do you mind when we were in the Championship before we got relegated to League One in Alloa with them? We could never get a win against them. They were like a cockroach. You couldn't get rid of them. They were just a pain. But I do think that we'll overcome Inverness at the weekend. I'm hopeful of that. But like Tom said, it's probably going to be a tight one again. I'll go 1-0 with us this time. Same result as at the weekend, and we'll keep another clean sheet.
Tom?
Yeah, I think we've got a clean sheet against Arbroath after having gone months without a clean sheet. I think we're going to have another wee run of clean sheets. So I'm going to go 1-0 Thistle as well. I don't think Inverness are a particularly great side. I don't think Duncan Ferguson's done really much since he's come in. I don't think he's improved them to any great degree. I think they've still got some decent players. I think Billy Mackay is still a good striker. But I think our defence is looking much more solid. And yep, I'm going to go for a solitary goal victory over them and get just kind of consolidate that position in third for another week.
Heather?
Yeah, I'm going to back the clean sheet and I'm going to go 2-0.
Oh, I'll go against the clean sheet tide. I'll go 2-1. I'm just looking at the league table and Inverness is they've actually got the fourth best defence in the league. They've got a playoff defence. Having said that, though, only Airdrie, surprisingly, and Arbroath at the bottom of the league have scored less goals against them. But I do think I agree with the general consensus that it'll be a tight game, so I'm going to go for a sort of scrappy 2-1 win. Before we move on, Tom, the women are back in action against Hearts at the weekend. That's another big game in the league. How important is it to sort of put the cup final behind them now and focus on the league run-in? It's another sort of tough run-in with finishing top six with some tough fixtures against, obviously, the teams at the top of the league.
It's going to be really interesting to see just how they do react to Sunday. I mean, obviously, the focus has been on that for such a long time. Now it's out the way. You know, it's going to be difficult for them to pick themselves up. But I think we've got the advantage as we've got those players that were cup-tied and on loan with Rangers that couldn't play. So at least Brian's got the flexibility if he wants to kind of make a few changes and freshen things up. And I think it probably will need to be freshened up after Sunday. I mean, big pitch is going to bound to be tired legs. It'd be really good to bounce back with a victory. I think that'd be a real statement to put out there. We want to get a few wins under our belt in top six this time. We only managed a point against, funnily enough, Hearts last season. I think we probably will get a couple of wins. I'd be surprised if we don't. And hopefully, one of those wins will be Sunday. It'd be good to see a few people that were along at Tynecastle on Sunday as well, thinking, well, I'm perhaps going to watch them up at Peasy. So it'd be good to see if there's a few extra bodies through the turnstile as well on Sunday.
Absolutely. Another shout though, and I'm sure like what you saw on the field will be enough to get you to Petershill, but just in case you're just swithering and need that little bit of extra persuasion, the food stall at Petershill is incredible. So get yourself along there on Sunday. Tom, can we commit you to a score prediction? Are you going to back the women for a win?
Yep, I'm going to go 2-1 Thistle.
Excellent stuff. Before we move on to Partridge Thistle, a shout out for a friend of the show, Ian Hepburn. Another excellent edition of From the Sublime is now available. Pop culture zine is very good, and I'm not just saying that because I've written a piece in it, which is the worst piece in it, actually. There's an array of articles, pop culture. There's a really good one in there about Richard Herring, if that's your sort of thing. So get involved in that. From the Sublime. Heather, do you want to come in?
Yeah, I do, Matt. I've got two things. Firstly, just a little reminder about the fact that this Saturday is our celebration of her game two at the club for a year. It's a year in March since we started the partnership. Tom has helped lots and been instrumental with a lovely shout out page for some of the amazing female fans and volunteers in the Part Thistle family. So I just want to thank him for that and encourage people to grab a programme, but also to encourage people to get their badges out and just support what is something that's been really, really important for so many people and over the past year, and you know, been great conversations, but also really championed the importance of women in all football. And I do think that message can't be said enough. So there'll be plenty of badges available around the ground in the different pubs and stuff before the game. And just it's not like a big party. It's just, I think, a kind of statement of support. So wearing your badge and just being part of this journey means a lot to us at Her Game 2 HQ. And please just think about the things that you say before you say them. Think about how they might make other people feel, but also just let's, after, as Tom said earlier in this podcast, you know, an absolutely incredible a weekend for the women's team and all the, you know, the inspiration they bring, just to make people think about females in football. But also, just as you were doing a shout out, I also want to shout out a really good friend of mine, Craig Geddes, who has said to me at Meet the Manager night with Chris Dillon in Edinburgh that he hasn't missed a podcast this season so far and how much he enjoys it. And I know that the one thing that he won't be looking forward to is the full play of Focus at the end. Apparently that's the one thing that he can't stand. So Craig, I really hope you enjoy this one this time, but thank you for your lovely message to everyone. Cause I know, I mean, Matt and David, the work that you guys do is so, you know, appreciated by many fans, and especially, you know, the ones on this call and in our pod chat, but I think that just needs to be said.
Well, Craig, thank you very much for listening. We love the loyal listeners out there. And if you do not like Focus at the end, we would encourage you, again, as mentioned earlier, turn it down and just have a moment's silence for our broth away. We'll remember the sacrifice. While we're all
backslapping, like
sorry, go David.
I was going to say, if we get any more sort of slander about Focus, you will just get Ladio as the outro as well. So, you know, rest easy on the Focus slander.
No, I love Focus, and I know for a fact that Focus is my dad's absolute favourite. So I'm just to like let it show that I was not slandering Focus. I was just passing on a message.
While we're all back slapping, make sure you buy a programme on Saturday. I know Tom's put an immense amount of effort into the programmes, especially this month. I think we've had four home games, so it's been a hectic month. The quality hasn't dipped. I know most of us in the call have contributed to the programme this season, but there's like obviously other fantastic articles from Tom himself. Aaron's doing a really cool bit just now, looking back on the COVID season, which I'm finding fascinating. She's had some really good interviews in with players this season. The Faces of Firhill features excellent as well. Really good value for £3. And as we've mentioned, you can get it delivered if you can't make it along to Firhill. And Rhys, I know we've plugged your weekly newsletter before. Just in case folk missed that or haven't signed up, I've really enjoyed reading them actually every Wednesday. They're really good as well. How can folk ensure that they get that emailed to them every week?
If you just go on my Twitter, at Rhys Haldane, R-E-I-S-S-H-A-L-D-A-N-E, I've pinned the tweet where you can click on the link to subscribe to the newsletter, and it gets sent to you 6 p.m. every Wednesday. If you've not subscribed or you don't see it, I'll tweet out the article or I'll post it on the official forum from the online Herald when they post it on a Thursday morning. So I'm sure if you're on Twitter, you'll see it some way. But I'll need to, after this call, I'll need to go and write up this week's article. So pain. But I'm glad you enjoyed them. It's nice words, and it's good to know that the work that you put in is, people are enjoying reading them. So it's nice. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you. Adminova, that is as back slappy as we'll get. This has sort of gone away from the sort of self-deprecating tone that we normally aim for on this podcast. So we'll finish with Partridge Thistle. I'm going to ask you all, when have you been conned? Now I'm going to tell this story. I'm going to name my pals because they don't listen and I don't care. I'm in a group chat and two of them were saying they've got spare tickets for the Scotland game tomorrow night. So I said, I'll take one. I don't know why I hadn't renewed my sort of season pass yet. That's an excellent deal by the SFA, the yearly passes. I don't know why I hadn't renewed that yet. But anyway, I was looking for a ticket, so I thought, I'll take one. One of the pals says, ah, no bother. How much do you want for it? 20 quid. No problem. Sent them over the 20 quid. A couple of minutes later, somebody else pops up and goes, oh, yeah, I'll take the other one. Other pal says, that's great. How much do you want for it? Ah, no, don't worry about it. Nothing. So due to being 3 or 4 minutes early in my claim for a Scotland ticket, I'm £20 down. So I feel like I have been conned a little bit. Thanks, Hannah. So I'm going to ask you, I'll just open this up. Anyone can come in with a good story. If they've got one, when have you been conned?
I've got one. Think back to, let me just see, the 31st of August 2019. It was a game at Fort Hill, actually. We lost 3-2 to Air United. A certain Dario Zanata conned me into thinking that he was going to be Thistle's greatest ever player, because that debut was out of this world. I remember picking the ball up in his own half and skinning 4 or 5 guys and assisting Shea Gordon. I thought we had a player on our hands at that point, and I was well and truly conned.
I think that's your best ever Partridge Thistle answer. It's good to know that you're a couple of weeks out of the team, you've been rested and you've come back and you're firing on all cylinders. That's great stuff. Tom, you were quick with your hand up there.
Yeah, I've been conned, and I was conned by Chick James Charnley, though this was my own naivety. I can't remember what spell it was. He was in at Fir Hill, but I was in at Fir Hill for whatever reason, and it was just before Mother's Day, and he was being the postal entrepreneur and was flogging Mother's Day's cards. So I thought, okay, I'll just take one of these. It'll save me having to go to Clinton Cards. Gave him 5 or whatever it was for the card, and I got home, and I was writing this lovely heartfelt message to my mum in the Mother's Day card, and I've realised the card was from the two of us. So, one of my favourite Thistle players of all time conned me out of a fiver.
That's good stuff. Heather?
So mine's not football related, but I don't know if you are aware of the dead dog in a suitcase story. Do you know this one?
No.
Okay, so really, really briefly, Kirsten and I were told this story, and we really we got told it as if it was like our friend's auntie's cousin, and basically the way the story goes is that they got employed to be a dog sitter in London, and they went and house sit and dog sit, and they arrive at the flat, and then they're looking after the dog, and then the dog unfortunately dies, and they are like, I don't really know what to do, I'm looking after this dog, it's died and I'm going to get in so much trouble, and they don't want to contact the family because they're on holiday, so they go and they're like, right, I'll go and get something from the vet or something, just look after, just sort it out, get a death certificate, whatever. And they don't know how to transport the dog, and they don't have a car. So what they do is they put the person puts the dog in the suitcase. The dog goes in the suitcase and they get the train. And there's a nice man on the train, like, helps her on with her suitcase and stuff. And it's like, oh, like, where are you off to? And obviously she doesn't want to say, like, what's going on. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm just, like, moving house and stuff. So anyway, like, goes to get off the train and the man steals the case and, like, runs off with the dead dog in the suitcase. And it's all this palaver, like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to tell the people that you were looking after their dog and the dog's died and you've lost the dog because it's in a suitcase? And yeah, so Kristen and I were extremely invested in the story. I've told so many people it, like, you know, and the fact, yeah. Turns out we were recently, like, Googling it, or, like, someone said this and was like, you do know that is, like, a made up story. Like, everyone has, like, a friend's cousin who's done this or something. And we were aghast because so many, like, you know, quite a few of our friends were like, you know, I've been, like, dog sitting, cat sitting recently, and we're like, oh my goodness, like, just make sure, like, no matter what happens, take a suitcase, like, just, you know, that kind of thing. And apparently it's just this massive urban legend, and I've looked it up, and there's, like, so many, like, stories about it online, and, like, the, like, basically it being some sort of, like, social experiment for, like, how people react in certain situations. But I feel extremely conned, because for at least a month, like, no, like, you know, when conversation was kind of lulling at some point, I'd be like, guess what happened to our friend, cousin? And I'm really telling the story. So I feel extremely conned, that fact that, like, I told this story so confidently. And yeah, it is a legend.
I have some questions, and I know that you're in a rush to go to a Jags Foundation meeting, Heather, but I hope these questions are as important, if not more important. Right, firstly, why was your takeaway from that story that if you were going to dog or cat sit, you should take a suitcase in case it dies? Why was that the takeaway?
I don't know. I've had a really strange weekend, and it's just, this is just my opinions have been wild. Absolutely.
Okay, we'll take the rest of the interrogation off air, and we'll let you get off if you need to bolt. David, do you have a good one to round off Partridge Thistle this week?
It's been an all-timer of a Partridge Thistle this week, and I feel that I really had to push the boat out. So I'm going to go for someone who has not been conned yet, but will be conned. My friend doesn't have the best experience of romance. He's not a Thistle fan, but, you know, you just cannot be too sure, right? And he was, over the last year or two, he's went for an amazing, incredible weight loss regime and lost, like, an unbelievable amount of weight. You can't even fathom how much he's lost, right? And it's brought a lot of confidence for him and stuff like that. So he started going online dating and stuff like that. And so his first online date, he met someone online who was from America, who came over to Scotland and met him, and they had a lovely time. And then she came over a second time, and then immediately cut it off after about 2 days, went home. It was all very odd, but by all accounts, it was her, not him. She was just very odd. And, but he gets spooked by this, and he became obsessed with the idea of, like, compatibility and love languages, you know, it's sort of like relationships, you know, people you're in with relationships with aren't necessarily 100% compatible. The fact that you have different things is kind of good. It gives you something else to, you know. He's became obsessed with this and really, like, been very picky and selective with the people that he's been going. Anyway, I was talking to my friend who's his cousin last week, and they were telling me that he's met this woman and they're going on a first date. I'm going to give you all a guess, because it's properly wild, and I just want you to have a guess. So think mental first dates. Where are you going?
Ibrox Hospitality.
If anything, that's sane compared to this. Reese, any shouts? Mental, like, you need to really think outside the box.
I really don't know. Staying at, like, a haunted house or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, a good shout. Tom, any guesses?
Mine boggles.
It really fucking does when you hear what he's taking.
Wild camping, something like that, can't.
Oh, far, far worse. He is going to Estonia for his first date. I we don't know about this woman. We don't know where she's from, don't know where Estonia has went. And we thought, now, speaking of someone who's worked in banking quite a lot in my life, all of my alarm bells are ringing in my head going, this is just screams romance scam. Like really. And a lot of friends have told them, going, are you really going to Estonia for your first date? Yep. And go, well, he won't be stupid enough to do it like for a wee while. He's going to build up to it. No, he went yesterday. He's in Estonia as we speak. It is wild. I cannot wait to find out more about this. The second I hear news, we'll have an emergency pod about what's happened to my friend in Estonia, because I just don't know. It just feels so bad and really dodgy. But yeah, pro tip, you know, take it from us. Take it from me and Matt and long-term relationships. Don't go on your first date to Estonia unless you are from Estonia.
I hope you're sort of taking notes of this expedition, just so that the Netflix documentary is as accurate as possible.
Literally, I've told lots of people this story, and everyone says this needs to be a Netflix doc. Yep. I've already got the pod storyboard in my head of what's going to happen with this. But yeah, God bless and good luck.
On a similar note, I've got a friend who will remain nameless in this instance, who went to Switzerland with a girl who he fancied, but not on a date or in a relationship, in a sort of attempt to get in there, but prematurely. And he will remain nameless, but I'm preparing a best man speech for him, so that might feature.
I was going to make the joke, does Ali Crawford have any tips on, my friends, about going abroad to on a first date? But you know, good to know how it ratified. It definitely was him. But yeah.
Very, very lastly, Draw Loser Draw Quiz 3 is in the works. Venue and date to be confirmed, but questions and rounds have already been written. There is a PTFC round already in the books. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for details of that. David Stevenson going for the three-peat when that comes around. David, Tom, Rhys, Heather, thank you very much for joining me on today's Draw Loser Draw. Episode 200, David, we are recording that tomorrow. That will be out in the next sort of 10 to 12 days. We'll be back next week as well with the review of the Inverness game and all the usual stuff. But in the meantime, stay safe.